likely that they are going to adapt. You see, the people you've been associating up with up to now, they've been earning $18,000 a year, Al. And I would imagine some of those people probably have quit talking to you. Yeah, Marge's sitting there, his wife, saying, yeah, that's right. Yeah, they've quit talking to us. I experienced this. When my income took off, some people I thought were my friends quit talking to me. Of course, you're earning this money. What are you going to do with it? Well, I like spending it. My wife gets a bigger kick out of it than I do, but you buy a nice new car. They say, oh, you're a big shot now. And, of course, you probably want to live in a nice new home. What was the matter with the old one? Not good enough for you? You've got to be prepared for this, and you've got to develop mental strength, because I'm going to tell you, at first it hurts. It bothers you. They try and pull you back to where they are. Annie was telling me about a time she went down on a call for a play, and she went with a couple of her, what she thought were her girlfriends. She got the leading role in the play, and the friends didn't even get in the supporting cast. I have never been in a play, but my daughter has, and one that Scott was musical director of, and I watched them rehearse. I went over and I got to know the cast. They work hard. They work long hours. This is before it ever goes on stage. I mean, they start early in the morning, they go to late at night. They may do this for weeks on end, then just to find you got to rewrite this section, you got to learn it all over again. New energy has to be put into it. It's tough, grueling work. There's no audience there to give you applause. There's nobody there but the director, the producer, to critique what you're doing and say, that's not good enough, do it again, you know, do it different, do it better. It can be a little disheartening. Opening night is a big night, big night. Now, I know that intellectually. I don't really know it emotionally because I've never been in a play. But I watched them, and they were excited. And, of course, afterwards, there's a party for the cast. Because Colleen happened to be in this one, I was invited to the party, and I was standing watching them, and they were so enthused, they were excited. I mean, big deal. Well, opening night of Anne's play, her girlfriends didn't come out to support her. And that's usually a time, I know that one that I'm referring to with Scott, that Colleen was in. There were members of the cast where their families flew in from the United States. Yours did, as a matter of fact, Scott. I met his mother and his sister. In fact, I had breakfast with them after. They had flown in from Colorado. Another chap had his family flow in from Alberta. They come out to support them on opening night. Well, these girls never even come out to support Anne, and it bothered her. It really bothered her. And she was talking to an old friend of her dad who has since passed away. His name was Hap. Hap wrote her this letter. She told me about it. She says, I'll send you a copy of it. I've given it to a few people on occasion. She said, you can have permission to use it in the seminar. It is a classic. It is a classic. Now, as I read this, I want you to keep this in mind. As you take that new idea and you make up your mind, you're going to go right to the goal. You're not going to be part of the 80%. You're going to be the 20%. And you want to remember this, Mark. Don't let those kids pull you down. They're on the wrong track. And you make up your mind, you're going to execute this regardless of what anybody says. Hap said, Dear Anne, once upon a time there was a fellow by the name of Al Capp who wrote a comic strip called Lil Abner. Many years ago, he had some characters in the strip who lived in a town near Dogpatch. They were the town bums, the ne'er-do-wells, the failures whose whole aim in life was to pass judgment on others. Their criticism and ridicule became so vehement that in time, the rest of the people in town became acutely conscious of it. The boys down at the stable, as they were called, because that's where they spent most of their time, soon set the social standards for the whole town. Nobody could do anything without their sanction. Because they lived within the structure of their crummy little world, they would laugh and point their finger at anyone and everyone who tried to be better than he was. As a result, the people feared the ridicule of the boys down at the stable so much so that they stopped trying. Soon everybody became bums, and the whole town died. He said, in every social structure, Anne, whether it's family, town, country, or state, there are the boys down at the stable. They're the jealous ones. They're too scared to try something different, and they show their ignorance by laughing at those who do. Learn to recognize the man for what they are, and don't let them hurt you. It takes a certain amount of toughness in here to succeed. One has to rise above those who would tear you down so that they can laugh and say, I told you so. There's too many of us who love you and want you to make it, and I can put myself right at the top of the list. You aren't going to be. You aren't going